Parent Reality Podcast with your presenter, Johanny Meiring. Today we are focusing on therapy, and I have Zanette Cronier in the studio with me. I am so excited to have you here, Zanette. Welcome.
Thank you, Johanny. I'm very honored to be here, and thanks for picking my brain and me also gaining knowledge from a parent's perspective. I'm looking forward to that.
That's great. I'm going to introduce you to our listeners firstly, just to help them understand where you come from. So Zanette is a speech, language and feeding therapist. She completed her neurodevelopmental therapy course in 2014 and her advanced baby course in 2017. She also served as the chairperson for SANTA North Gauteng and is now serving as the vice chairperson for SANTA, the National Executive Committee. She's also currently serving at a special needs school, and she's a representative on the governing body for auxiliary services. She loves training in alternative augmentative communications and neurodevelopmental therapy. Zanette, I hope I got all of that right. It's really a mouthful. Zanette, I thought that we can start this interview just getting to know you better. And I really want to know from our side, the parents' perspective, and how did you know that you wanted to be a therapist? How did that happen?
Well, I was just always a very academic orientated person. And then when you get good grades at school, everyone tries to push you into medicine. But I just knew that that was not the calling that God had for me. So I went on a bit of an exploration. And my mom actually came across a prospectus of the University of Pretoria, and she read about audiology because that channels the scientific brain a little bit. And then I went for observations at another special needs school in Pretoria, and I just fell in love with the speech therapist. So I went to observe the different therapies, and I just fell in love with what a speech therapist does with the kids, and just that special connection that you get trying to just assist with communication. And then I had the opportunity to go to Germany as an exchange student that same year. And I was, it was also God's hand in it all. But then I ended up with a family, and the father that I lived with, he was a speech therapist in Germany. So I then had a whole month of getting to observe his sessions in the afternoon. Even if I didn't understand the language, I could still see the universal connection that they had. So that just got me hooked on it. And then there was no turning back.
That's amazing. I think you you started off with a bang, right? to see all those things and experience that. Tell me, did you have certain expectations, obviously, in these studying years and, the time where they try to explain to you what you were going to do as a therapist before you started practicing? Did you have certain expectations or images in your mind of how it should be, how it will be?
Well, I thought it was going to be a lot easier. And I think, I thought I could compartmentalize it a bit more, keeping my private life and my work life separate. Initially, I thought I was going to go into audiology because it's more predictable. And I like following a plan, and I like planning ahead and sticking to the program and ending up as a speech therapist. I really had to channel that right brain and get creative and force myself to just explore my own abilities as a therapist and as a person. I also never realized what an impact every child and parent I come across would have on my life, and how that would shape me as a mother, as a therapist, as a friend, as a daughter. Just the interaction with the kids that I work with and the families I work with has literally infiltrated every part of my being. Knowing what our priority should be and where it should lie. I think it was not at all what I expected. yeah, you expect a like a 9-to-5 job, and I think we never switch off. We carry these kids and their families with us in our minds and our hearts wherever we go.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting to hear that, because we know, I'm to all the listeners that doesn't know, but I'm speaking from Parent Reality, and we are a support group for parents with special needs children. And with us working day to day with parents and going, supporting them in their journey, it's interesting to hear the feedback that we get about therapy, because I've realized that most of the times parents sit with their child's therapist and talk about their losses, about their fears, about the things that they're not sure about. And many times the therapist it's actually the child's therapist, but they are the parent's therapist as well. Is that what you've experienced?
Yeah, definitely. So I think there are many sessions. Unfortunately, the setting that I work in now, mainly at a school, we have so little contact with the parents, but that once in a quarter that we get together, it feels like it's more support to the parent and getting the parent on the same page and trying to meet the parents' needs and their expectations. But in my private practice, I've had to limit, okay, well, you can only come into the session once every 2 weeks or once a month, because it does sometimes tend to deal more with what the parent is going through and how to cope with that. And it is sometimes necessary, but if I'm being paid to help the child make progress, it is sometimes, it puts that extra pressure, yeah, and time-wise, to reach goals for medical aides that want results, to just prove that, yes, therapy is working, but to find that balance, when do you support the parent? How much do you support the parent? Yeah, how far do you cross that barrier between personal connection and the professional conduct? That is a very fine line to manage. But I do think that sometimes if the parent-therapist relationship is not healthy, the amount of therapy might not even differ if we're not on the same page and we don't buy into the same goals. So sometimes therapy needs to stand on the side, and that connection with the parent and that counseling that you either receive from the parent or the parent receives from you does take priority over the physical therapy session.
Yeah. And that might differ from person to person, right? Because the one parent might be really expectant of change in their child. They might not be seeing it yet, whereas the other parent has got so many questions that you need to answer. You know, so then, like you say, the therapy for the child might fall behind a bit, or you might experience some stress not getting to therapy, knowing the time is running out, you have a next client coming in. All of that is a lot of factors to take in mind when we try to get productive outcomes for therapy, right? For these children. Yeah, yeah. So I want to ask you, do you feel like there is enough support for therapists for these kind of questions or challenges that you have?
I think if you're willing to ask and if you're willing to admit it, there is channels where you can get the help. I think as therapists, we all believe we can save the world, and we all believe that we have such a lot of, we have so much to give that no one can replace us. That is just, and it's a difficult point to get to in your life, to accept that you cannot change everything and you cannot be everything that everyone wants you to be, and that you do need to look after yourself. And I think it's really hard, because just from my colleagues and my friends, at a certain point, all of us have reached a breaking point. Yeah. So it's a very personal thing to come to the realization. When do you stop giving of yourself? Where do you draw that line? And to look after your own mental health, I think it's not necessarily that the services aren't available. I just think most of us are too proud to admit that we've reached that breaking point. because you feel that you have been you there in a supporting role, and you the one that's meant to be strong for the family and for the child. And admitting that you're not strong enough, you feel defeated. But I think there is strength that you can gain from actually admitting that you cannot cope with everything and asking for help, and not just feeling defeated. It's not being weak. It's actually being strong, being the one that asks for help.
And then also being a kind of a role model, even to a special needs parent, for instance, because like you guys, we've got the same problem. We also feel like we have to save everyone, or the child at least in your family, and make a condition which is not really meant to go away, totally go away, you know, be the one that that also tries to be a therapist. You know, we also try to be therapists sometimes. And it's like you say, if you don't admit to having your limits and only giving what you have to give and not more than that, it's only then that we can really be productive to reach the goal, because the goal at the end of the day is to help our children, right? We really want to help our children develop. So coming to that, say, you know, that we need to, as a team, as a therapist and a parent team, work together to help a child to develop. Because that's our overall goal, isn't it? You know, if we speak about then our relationship when we came together to have this common goal, I want to ask you, do you think that there is different perspectives, or how do you think these perspectives differ between a therapist wanting to grow and develop the child versus the parent wanting to grow and develop the child?
Yeah, so I think it also depends in what setting you work. That would sort of drive the direction you want to move in. Working with a lot of parents and becoming quite close friends with them, as a therapist, that changed my mindset quite a lot. Because in a school setting, we're expected to meet curriculum needs, and that's meant to be our number one priority. But working a lot with parents and in private practice, where there's certain of my patients that are unable to meet the curriculum needs, so they either homeschooling or having tutors assist them at home or whatever. It's really hard because the curriculum expects a certain amount of work to be done in a certain amount of time. So as a school therapist, I'm pressured by meeting certain requirements in each term so that the learner is able to pass the grade or carry on with the grade. If we look at learners with more severe physical difficulties or learners that use alternative communication, that for me is to get them to have some autonomy and spontaneous communication that's not driven by a therapist. So if that takes 3 months or 6 months or 3 years, I want that child to be an autonomous communicator. So yes, the curriculum is important, but it depends on what your goals are. I think it's very important that the whole team is on board. It doesn't help that just the speech therapist and the parents are on the same page, but the physiotherapist is working on a different goal, and that is working against what the parents necessarily want or what the speech therapist wants. When I worked in the public health sector, it was really difficult because majority of my patients, so they came with the kids to the clinic, and the main focus was they just wanted the child to walk. And if you have a child that walks, then very few people can see that your child is disabled. If you move around with them in a wheelchair or with a buggy, it is more visible, the disability. And I think that for us as speech therapists, we feel if we can teach a child to communicate, we open a whole nother world. And the child can tell you, I'm uncomfortable, or I want to go to the kitchen. But if the child is unable to communicate, then how do you really break into their world? So I think it is really difficult. But that is why the parent-therapist relationship is so important, to understand what the parents expect, and where do you see your child in 2 years, in 5 years, in 10 years. And I think it's important to also revise that every now and again. So as part of our initial assessment, we normally ask parents, where do you see your child in the next 5 years or 10 years? But it's important to not only ask that with the initial evaluation, but maybe every year or 2 years, get together and say, okay, are we still on the same track or where are we going to now? Because sometimes if the parents are still processing the diagnosis they received from a doctor, they're not there yet to know what the outcome is going to be. They don't have that knowledge yet. They don't have that experience yet. And it's an important role of the therapist to guide the parents through this whole process with the grieving and acceptance process to know, okay, but this is my child's abilities. Let's celebrate what the child is able to do other than focus on what the child is not able to do. And I think our medical model focuses a lot on what the child cannot do and trying to fix that. And that is, and sometimes the medical needs do take priority. If a child is unhealthy and sick, they cannot focus on therapy. And if the child is in so much pain to sit in a wheelchair, we cannot work on communicating with alternative communication because she's experiencing so much pain that is not the main priority. So getting the pain under control is more important than communication at that stage. Yeah, the fluency of communication. But I think it has to be a continual process, and parents need to be honest about what they expect, and therapists need to be honest about what can be expected. And it feels like sometimes it's just doom and gloom and you're the one breaking the bad news all the time. And sometimes we feel like parents experience us as we lost hope. There is a point where one needs to accept what the child's abilities are. And it's not that anyone is giving up hope, but it is about celebrating where that child is at and being realistic about what can be expected in the future. And for myself as a therapist, each milestone we reach is just a bigger celebration to me as it is to the parents and to the child. So yeah, but it's a very fine balance, just being on the same page, having the same goals. I don't live with this child 24 hours a day. I'm not the one worried about am I going to outlive my child? Who's going to take care of my child? Will there be enough funding for this child? So we are more short-term role players and not necessarily for the next 40 years, where a parent of a child with special needs needs to think long-term. Are there any siblings? Will the siblings be willing to take care of this child? So I think a younger age therapist should start preparing parents for what the future holds and what possibilities might lie ahead, and that it shouldn't just come from other parents supporting each other, but that therapists become realistic and not make promises that they cannot keep as well. So I think a lot of times you shouldn't promise Atlantis, you're going to find Atlantis if you don't even know if Atlantis actually exists. So just to admit when you don't know, so I always tell the parents, I don't know where your child is going to end up, but I promise I'll be there along the way to provide the support. But making promises about it's going to take 6 months or 2 years or, no one knows what the future holds. None of us expected a worldwide pandemic the last 2 years. So I think just being more realistic about that would also really help.
Is there times that, where this mismatch happens, where, the parent maybe they walk into your practice and they've got an expectation, like you said. I mean, because right in the beginning, I'm always thinking of the grieving process. And, when we're in denial, I think what happens to the parents, the first thing is we're going to fix this. So whatever is wrong, we're going to fix it. And then you are the first ones we come to, you are the ones first in line, because the specialist's first thing is either then medication or eating plans or, and therapy. And that's where you go. So you guys are the next faces in line for making this go away. Have you had those miscommunications a lot in your practice where parents maybe mistakenly think that they just need to stay with you for, say, 2 or 3 years, and then this thing will be fixed, whatever the problem is that you're working on with the child?
I think, unfortunately, too often, and yeah, I'm not working fully in private practice, where I think private practice therapists experience this a lot more. And the moment, I think the privilege I have is that we quite far, your child comes to a school for learners with special educational needs if you've already gone through quite a bit of the process. And so most of our parents are already in the acceptance phase. But I think in private practice, often that you encounter parents just after they receive the diagnosis. And then we do see that we call it shopping around. They shop around until they find a therapist that tells them what they want to hear. And the therapist, what I've experienced myself is 3-4 years later, they come back to the one that told them the truth and the realistic expectations of what the child, of what you can expect of the future. And I've had parents come back and said, I never should have left. I should have listened. But it's not wrong to go shop around. I myself have a son that has some difficulties, and I went for a second opinion. And when it differed from the first opinion, I went for a third opinion. So we all have the right to shop around and find what we are comfortable with. In the end, we as the parents take the responsibility. Like I said before, that is a lifelong responsibility that the parent has, where a therapist is a short-term role player. And some therapists get have the privilege to be long-term role players. But yeah, I think it is very difficult, especially it depends on what stage of grief you are in and what stage of the acceptance process you're in after receiving a diagnosis of your child with special needs, how open parents are to hearing what the therapist says. And the sad part is, because it's so individualized, you can literally go for 3 opinions and have 3 completely different opinions as well. So that's where what the parent, what the family requires and what that parent thinks is in the best interest of the child should be respected. So even if it's not coming to me for therapy, I respect that that parent made the best decision for their family dynamics, what their current need is. So maybe they might come back in 3 years and say, oh, I never should have left. And maybe that child flourishes. And yeah, that is just always my wish, that even if you didn't end up choosing to stay with therapy with me, that wherever that child ends up, the child is just, yeah, living their best life and having a quality of life that is appropriate. And yeah, that the family is happy and achieving success.
Well, that's wonderful. And you've been involved with Santa, you know, also then supporting therapists and giving them support in training, etc., right? Specifically for the neurodevelopmental specialization areas. Tell me, what do you think a therapist need to be able to negotiate this whole relationship better between them and the parent, you know, managing expectations, identifying the grieving cycle, helping the teamwork to flourish? What would you say is it that a therapist needs to be able to do that? Because I think earlier we said you guys don't really get training in that. Mm. Those are the things you pick up experientially, you know.
I think we need psychology degrees as well.
Okay.
Just the 2 years psychology modules, I don't think was enough that I received as an undergraduate. But I think that is each therapist's own responsibility to ensure that you have the right support and you have the right training. And I think that's why there are a lot of organizations hosting courses and workshops to be able to know how to deal with parents. And I think to also have an honest discussion with the parents that you are dealing with and saying, but what do you need from me? Do you need from me like weekly homework sheets? Do you need from me to just be an ear to listen when you need to unpack what happened during the week? What do you need from me? But as I, especially SANTA, the organization, we really try and listen to what our therapists need. And one of the topics that came up over the last year was just how to prepare parents and support parents in the long-term care of children of special needs. Because most of our children with neurological difficulties, it is a lifelong condition. It's not something that's going to disappear overnight. Not going to disappear even after 6 years or 10 years of therapy necessarily. It's something that has to be managed lifelong. Just having the tools, having specialists then share their knowledge with us to ensure that we are on the right track. And the specialists to me, in my eyes, are the parents, because you are the 24-hour caregivers of these of these children. You see them at their worst and you see them at their best, and you know each little achievement milestone that they reach, and to share that with therapists is very special. Yeah, just having more opportunities for therapists to be exposed to situations where they can learn a bit more about this, to have courses where parents can equip therapists with what your needs are and what you need from us, because we have the clinical skills and that we've been taught, but just that interpersonal skills and that emotional connection that some parents are looking for and some parents don't look for. So how to know when to read the cues that, okay, this parent does not want to chit-chat about your kids or your day. They want to come and they want to drop their child for therapy, and that's their hour that they get a break, that they can just relax and not take care of this child and read a book or play on Facebook or read their emails or whatever. Sometimes it's literally the only hour a day that parent gets a break that they really deserve. But I think, yeah, I think just having more opportunity for learning from parents, I think would definitely benefit us as therapists. And yeah.
That's wonderful, because like we spoke earlier, this is now actually, this whole interview is also endorsing the training course that we are now putting together as Parent Reality, a voice for the parent, and also wanting to really just engage therapists in such a way that they feel helped, you know, and feel like they can benefit or understand better what a parent goes through in order for them to have productive therapy. That's what I just imagine, you know, can be a goal to understand a parent better. And we are putting together this course. It's called Empower Your Practice. So in the light of this interview, we would like just therapists to know that we are putting together this course that focuses on self-care for the therapist. We look at the grieving cycle of a parent and the parent experience through the process of diagnosis and then the journey on. We talk about parent experiences ourselves. That's me, Desiree Pillay, and Nico Liebenberg. And then we also delve into the parent therapist relationship, and we end off with training, catching up and looking again at empathy and active listening. Is that something that can help, Zanette? Do you think it'll help?
Yes, I think it's desperately needed. and yeah, just another comment. I think, and yeah, as therapists, we become so used to atypical that we do sometimes. And I think it's one of the worst things, but I do think that you can reach a stage where you do lose your empathy because you're so used to it. And this is maybe this parent's first child with a disability or with a delay, but it's your 100th child that you've assessed with a disability. So I think it's really important that therapists realize that this is the first time that this parent is receiving this type of news, and this parent needs to take time to process it if we tell a parent that a child needs to repeat a grade or the child needs more extensive therapy, it's the first time that they hear it, and they need to go and process it and maybe discuss it with their spouse and decide financially, is it doable? It's a lot more than just, okay, let's start with therapy, let's get it done. Where for us that sometimes says it 10 times a day, we get a bit more used to breaking bad news than it is to hear the bad news. And I've been working for 12 years and it still sucks being the one to break the bad news. And I wish it did get easier at some stage, but I do think, yeah, there's therapists that after 40 years, they still have that empathy. And I've had the privilege to have mentors where I can see that you are able to stay human and you are able to stay in touch with that. And it's not necessarily the professional expectation that you are the one sharing the tissues with the parents and not just giving them the tissues. But I do think we need to realize how big a part empathy still plays, and that for parents, hearing bad news is a really difficult thing and they need the time to process, and that it's difficult to make big decisions in a short amount of time, even though we feel pressed for time, that we do find that balance and respect each other's different opinions. But empathy and active listening, it's such an important thing. And therapists, I think we are better at listening than specialists, where a specialist, yes, they take a lot of time assessing the child, but the thing is they make the diagnosis and then the child goes off until their next appointment in a year or so, where the therapist is the one that's then there continually on a weekly basis or as often as possible to support the parents. And it's sometimes the only people that the parents can unload on. So active listening is, I think, a really, really important part to play. And sometimes just, yeah, telling a therapist about something small might be actually major, because you might realize that this is actually maybe where the child's interest is at. And if I can use that, I can enter into their world and have that breakthrough that you need to have to connect with that child in a specific way.
Absolutely. It's worth so. I love hearing what you're saying, because I think that's definitely things that happen. But, you know, if we work on this together, there's not just one answer to every problem, right? So working together and just being open and honest and trying our best, that I think at the end of the day for both parties, is all we can do. And it's so much better to do it together than try to do it alone.
Definitely.
So, it's Annette. I'm so thankful for your time. Thank you so much for sharing your heart and your experiences. I hope we will speak again soon and that we will be in contact, working together and networking together. Thank you so much. It was wonderful speaking to you.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
Dear listener, thank you so much for spending time with us. If you are a therapist interested in the training we present, or a parent who needs some community support, please head over to our website on www.parentreality.co.za or find us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to journey with you. Goodbye.